This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today. We've got a great show for you, and we're going to kick it off with our good friend, Greg Bloom. Barbersfoods.com is the website, and their number, 303-466-7338. Always good to have Greg in and talk food. Bud, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me over. What a beautiful day.
It is.
I can't believe the year's half over. You know, and it's almost July. Next week's July 1st, and it'll be Christmas before we know it. We'll be talking prime rib roast next time.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going by fast. But now we're in summer grilling season, so now it's time to be cooking those Beeler's brats and those Beeler's hot dogs and those Angus steaks every Friday on your grill.
Absolutely. And I told you when you came in, I said, hey, before I tell you I'm mad at you, I found out you just got these pork chops in because I just went over and picked up an order and got a case of those pork chops. And boy, Victoria made my snot. I mean, unbelievable.
Yep. They're good.
You just got those.
Yeah, just got those. They're delicious. You know, people used to like pork chops when they used to be good, but you see them very seldom on a restaurant menu anymore compared to like the 50s, 60s, 70s. It's mostly because of the way they breed pigs now, and not Tim Beeler and his Duroc line, but the conventional pork business. They want that hog to market as fast as possible. So they created this genetic hybrid through breeding that grows fast, but there's no marbling anymore in the loin.
Yeah.
And the pork chops come out of the loin, and that's why they're dry, and restaurants have all dropped them off the menu now, except for Tim Beeler's chops. There's marbling in them because very high-quality genetics, the Duroc pork from Denmark, and it's just delicious. It's like the Wagyu of the pork world, really.
It is for sure. For those that haven't heard you before, which it's hard to believe anybody hadn't heard you here on KLZ, you do a lot with John Rush as well. But just kind of give us again what people are getting different instead of when they go in and buy their, we'll just say, steaks retail. What are they getting different with Barbers?
Yeah, not only retail, you know, you should never buy a steak ever retail unless you're just very, very confident in the guy behind the counter that he knows where that beef came from. But 9 out of 10 times, maybe 99 out of 100 times, they have no idea where the beef came from, how it was raised, what farm it came from, what ranch it came from, how long it was aged. They have no idea. They're just filling the keep case full. And even I was on Facebook the other day, and there's all these ads now for companies like mine that sell meat online.
I've noticed that.
And there's some, you know, real characters. And like you get, I saw one this morning. It was like you get 30 steaks for $50. And I just, you know, you're not going to get very high quality meat. That's dairy cow meat was what that's going to be.
Sure.
You know, you'll order once and you'll be done. But the problem with those companies and the retail counter is they have no idea where the animal was raised, how it was raised, who raised it. So that's the difference between us. I personally know all of the producers. I know where the beef comes from. I know I've been in all the processing plants where it's processed. I've watched how they cut the steaks. It's not important only. It's important how the animal is raised and how it was cared for and how long it was on grain, if it's a grain-fed beef product. But it's also real important where it was processed. I mean, I've heard nightmares lately from people, even my own sister, that ordered half of a beef from a rancher. And God bless the rancher, you know, just trying to sell direct to the consumer. Mm-hmm. But Jane said it was terrible beef. So sometimes you win on those deals. You get a great animal.
Sure.
But sometimes you lose. But the problem is they probably didn't age the beef and they didn't wrap it correctly. It's just wrapped in freezer paper and it burns.
Yeah.
And it's not like in the waterproof vacuum sealed containers that we sell all of our products in, those really high quality packaging. So the plant, my point is, the plant that processes the beef is as important as the meat itself. So,
and that is one thing as a convenience. Like I say, I just picked up a nice order from you a couple of days ago, and it's nice just to take it out of the box and put it in the freezer. I don't have to go get some vacuum seal machine and do stuff. I mean, it's professionally done. It's going to last few right. years in the freezer.
Yeah. They're actually, if you call the USDA and ask them, you can even go to USDA.com and ask Karen, how long does meat last in the freezer? You know what they'll tell you? It really doesn't have a shelf life expiration. Mm-hmm. As long as the package is intact
right.
and it's kept it cold, it's indefinite.
Yeah. I have known people that have, you know, of course, in our hunting show, Sportsman Colorado, but a guy told me, he said, I've had some 10 years. I mean, literally 10 years old that was just as good then as it was. So
yeah. You know, the plants that we use real thick, high quality, the most expensive film you can buy. Mm-hmm. And then they vacuum seal it with, you know, really good industrial machines that have super vacuums on them.
Right.
You know, the problem, I don't know if you've ever done this, but, you know, like you get an elk and then, or deer, or someone gives you some. And, you know, it's in there for a year or two. You might even lose a couple packages for a while. Mm-hmm. And then you eat it and you thaw it out and it's got a real off taste. It's absorbed right. the other flavors from the freezer.
flavors, we'll call it.
Yeah, from the freezer. And it doesn't taste good anymore.
Right.
Now, you probably wouldn't keep a Barber's Farms product in your freezer for 3 years. But if you did, if you lost a couple steaks down there, they'd still taste great because of the vacuum.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg Bloom is with us. Once again, it is barbersfoods.com. And you can go on right there, folks, and go through their website. They've got a lot of great products. And you will notice the title on there is right now, July 4th in steaks. So kind of give us some of the specials you've got going on right now, Greg.
Yeah, we have two great specials right now, especially considering where the beef market is. You can go to the retail stores and buy a non-aged, not restaurant quality piece of garbage steak for more money than you're going to pay from Barber's on these ribeye steaks. There's these Colorado grain-fed Angus ribeye steaks that are aged for 30 days, just like a restaurant chef would.
Right.
We sell that same steak to a restaurant chef all the time. And so they're high-quality steaks. That's a steak that you're going to go spend $50 for in a steakhouse.
Sure.
You know, and then that's one, you know, where you order a steak and it's $50. Then you order a side and it's $6. And you order iced tea and it's $8.
No doubt.
It's pretty sure it's $100.
I know.
Pay for the building, right? So, but you get some really nice quality steaks that you will not be ashamed of serving at any time. And we guarantee all of them. I mean, I've never had anyone say, I want my money back or I want to trade out. I mean, we would trade out. If people say, I got a bad steak, I'd comp them a new steak. But it's never happened.
Right.
You know,
I mean, no, I've told some people, I said, look, it's just between me and you. You order what's your, and if you don't like it, I'll buy it back.
Yeah, we'll buy it back.
Yeah.
Or we'll give you a further free steak. I mean,
again, never had any, I mean, everyone has loved it.
Yeah. So we got the Angus steaks there, and they're certainly at $15, $16 for a really high quality steak. If you want to splurge and go into the Wagyu world, where the marbling's extreme, we have some Wagyu tomahawks there, some Wagyu strip loins, some Wagyu. We sell these to some local meat stores,
right.
And they double the price. So they take the price out and they double it.
Sure.
So, and I'm amazed that people buy it. They do. They do. But they're happy. They're very happy. They would, you know, come and buy more. So I would say if you really want to, you know, treat yourself to something just out of the world fantastic, try the Wagyu tomahawks or the Wagyu strip loins or the Wagyu ribeyes. And those all come from Dan Morgan's ranch that I've been to. I know him personally. I know he raises the animals there. It's a great program. So,
And, hey, if you want something, we will get it to you, all right, somehow, some way, before July 4th, very easily. So if you want to place an order with barbersfoods.com, there's actually a little box right there. You can scroll down. Who helps you? You can put Scott Watley in there, and then they'll let me know. And, hey, we, if you're in the Denver metro area here, we will get it to you, and I'll bring it to you, or one of Greg's team will bring it to you, but we will get it to you here. And, Greg, again, convenience, yeah, you're in the stores. So you think I'm just going to buy it, but, man, don't sacrifice the quality of what you can get at Barber's Foods when it can be brought to you. You don't have to come get it. We'll bring it.
Right. Yeah, if they're in the Denver metro area, that we don't charge for shipping. We just, you know, we have trucks out every day, and we have myself and my son, and, you know, we're all driving all over all the time, so we just, we got an order in Arvada. We're going to deliver to Arvada anyway to a restaurant there on our, throw it on the truck, you know. But if they're outside of the Denver metro area, then we charge just to recover the cost of shipping. So if they live in Fort Collins, for example, it's $40 to ship to Fort Collins, two-day UPS. That just covers the box, the cost of the box, the gel packs, and then the shipping. So we're not making any money off of it. In fact, we actually lose money on it a little bit, but it's okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's everyone's just so used to free shipping.
Sure, I know.
Yeah. So, but we're glad to send steak anywhere in the state, and you'll be proud to serve it to anyone. You know, I get asked all the time, though, especially this time of year, someone will, you know, they'll know I'm in the meat business. Like, hey, you know, I bought some steaks at whatever, and I shouldn't have bought them there. But then I cooked them, and they were just not, they didn't turn out right. And then I ask, well, how did you cook them? So I just want to talk a little bit about, you know, sure, some mistakes people make that, you know, you'd think that are common sense, but people just don't know. You know, so you start with, if you have a frozen steak, you need to slack it out. Don't throw a frozen steak on the grill. It's like a no-brainer, right? But people still do it. You can throw a frozen hamburger patty on the grill and a frozen piece of salmon on the grill that we sell, but not a steak. So if you didn't really plan on dinner and dinner's 2 hours away, you can speed thaw those in cold water. And restaurant chefs do this all the time. Like, oh, we just got a reservation for 20 people, and they all want the filet mignon. So they'll speed thaw them in water in the sink, where they'll just put them in a bowl, big bowl or a big pan, and then just trickle cold water on them. You ever seen how they do the water trickle?
Right, right.
For about an hour, and then it thaws them out real quick.
Okay.
So I do that if I, oh, hey, we had 8 people coming over for dinner. Now there's 4 more, thaw out some steaks. But don't ever cook the steaks from frozen.
Okay.
The best thing, of course, is the night before, put them in your refrigerator. Or the morning of, put them out on your counter. And there's a little bit of controversy in the chef world about whether you should cook a room temperature steak or a steak that came out of the refrigerator. And honestly, I've tried both. I don't think it really matters. But the logic is that a steak at room temperature isn't going to have such a temperature difference to cook it, right? So it's already warmed up. So it's not going from super cold or cold to, you know, 400 degrees on. So it's going to cook faster and retain more juice. I don't actually think it matters. I've done blind taste tests, you know, where, okay, we'll try it both ways, and they're both good if you cook
right.
it. So, but then after you get that steak thawed, salt and pepper on both sides. That's all I do, salt and pepper. You don't need to marinate it. This is high-quality meat we're talking. We're not talking about, you know, something chewy and rubbery, or, you know, that you need to marinate for 48 hours.
Right.
Or you need a lot of A1. No. This is high-quality.
No ketchup allowed
on these. Yeah, though. Don't do that. If you're going to eat ketchup, then eat chicken or something. Don't ruin this nice beef. It's just, yeah.
Right.
But then you get that grill or whatever surface you're cooking with as hot as you can. And if you don't have a good barbecue that can get hot, don't use it. Use a cast iron grill in your kitchen. So cast iron cooks great. You know, just a little bit of butter in there, just a little bit, and then real high temperature, and then sear that steak on both sides. And, you know, don't flip it back and forth like a fish coming out of the water. You know, it just really needs to be flipped once or twice. You know? So, yeah. I see people cooking steaks on YouTube, and they're flipping it every minute, you know, and like, that you don't need to do that.
Alone.
Number one, you kind of ruin the whole cooking method, because the residual heat in there is moving up into the center, and you just took it off the heat and flipped it over and not start all over, you know, outside. So, you know, if you see a restaurant chef, he will flip that steak at the most 2 times, because sometimes they like to put the grill marks in there at 90 degree angles, get that grid looking.
Yep.
So down for a minute, 45 degrees, just up and over 45 minutes, and then 2 minutes, turn it over. But you really can't cook a steak perfect unless you have a tool. And that tool is a meat thermometer.
Yeah, go through some
And right
of those
here, I've got the cheapo one that costs $4, just the one with the little dial. These are fine. You just have to calibrate them, because when they come in from the store, they might be off like that. You
right.
know? So you have to just hold the base and turn it to, how do you know what temperature to set it at? You put this in a cup of ice water, and then after a minute, you set this to 32, and that's how you calibrate
it. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm talking, this is just for the listeners, this is just, you know, a needle with an analog dial on the top, you know, not a digital thermometer.
Right.
But you do need to calibrate these. Otherwise, you could, like, really ruin a good piece of meat. Like, well, I cooked it to 130. But, and then there's a, you know, $10 digital one. So these, a little more expensive, $10-$15. But they're
well worth the investment.
Yeah, well worth the investment. Yeah, I mean, you can use this over and over and over again. But you want to cook a steak to an internal temperature of about 135 for medium rare. It depends on how thick it is, too. But most of the steaks that you're going to buy at barbersfoods.com are going to be about an inch thick. So you want to cook those to 130-ish, 135. Pull them off the grill, and then they're going to keep cooking another 5 degrees after they're off. You let them rest, but they keep cooking. That residual heat just keeps going.
All right.
So one mistake people make is I'm going to cook these to medium. You know, I'm going to just get the pink out. There'll be just a touch of pink in the center or no pink, but then they didn't take them off 5 minutes ago, and that's why you need a meat thermometer, because if you pulled it at 135, it's going to keep cooking to 140, and then you're going to be at medium. So, yeah, that's the thing, is just have a meat thermometer so that you know when to pull it.
And yep. Like chicken, what do you want your temp?
Chicken, any other protein besides beef. And including hamburger patties. Hamburger patties and chicken, any poultry, 165 internal temperature, 165.
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason you want to cook to 165 is because any pathogen or nasty stuff that would make us sick, like E. coli or salmonella, dies at 165.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, your grill is at, let's say, 400 degrees, 500 degrees. Maybe it's an old grill and it's only at 300 degrees. But after just 30 seconds of your steak or your chicken on that grill, the external part, the surface, outside surface, you know, the E. coli is dead instantly, right? Mm-hmm. But the internal, if there was E. coli on the inside, you know. And now how does E. coli get on the inside? Well, it gets pushed in there through mechanical tenderization. What's that? Well, that's these machines, these cabinets that they have in meat plants that they're like, they call a needle machine. Just think of a machine that it's on a conveyor and then goes into a cabinet and then this thing comes down with thousands of needles in it and pushes it all the way down into the meat and then back up. It's called a Jacquard machine or a needle machine. Why would they do that? Well, because it makes the steak or the protein very tender, very tender.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to Costco, Costco has pretty good meat, but all of their meat is needled. And because it's needled, mechanically tenderized, Costco's disclaimer on every ribeye, every strip loin, just go there and read it. It's real small. You got to put reading glasses on if you're old like me. But you got to put your reading glasses on. It says, cook to internal temperature of 165. Because they could have theoretically pushed E. coli or salmonella from the surface outside into the center. So now the USDA says, because you needled it, we want the disclaimer there for safe handling. But if you cooked a ribeye to 165 internal temperature, you ruined it. Ruined it. So it's a bad idea. Why does Costco do that? They don't like returns because the steak was tough. I don't want to. They want to. You know how they have a money back guarantee, no questions asked. It's great until you bring back a ribeye that's half eaten.
No doubt. Yeah. You're just joining us. Greg Bloom is with us. It is barbersfoods.com. 303-466-7338 is the number. But more importantly, just go to the website. Hey, place your order. And, Greg, people can even do this on a subscription basis if they kind of start going through some of the products, figure out what the family enjoys. Hey, we can do it ever on their timing.
Yeah, right.
Every month.
We have they can order a la carte. They want a case of hot dogs once a month with a case of Beeler's Brats with a case of burgers. That can just show up once a month, and we'll put it in a hard cooler on the side of their house, kind of like the milk companies do, and just keep it stocked up however they want to order, however often. They can order every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, every month. That way it just shows up, right? And
sure.
Their thing is we have the family essentials box and the A and B, so we have a package, and by next week we'll have the summer griller box finish. We're doing a special one for grilling essentials. So, but there's already a lot of packages up there. You know, there's the Beeler's breakfast morning box. You know, so just you got it. You wake up any day, you got to have some bratwurst or some Beeler's bacon or
bacon.
Yeah, and then you cook too much bacon. I always cook it in the oven on sheets.
Yeah,
I fill up the oven. I do two sheet pans and I hardly ever have a day where that bacon is left on the counter at 5 p.m.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Because, you know, you put it out there at room temperature, it's fine, it's cooked.
Sure.
And people come by and they eat it. You save some for BLTs for lunch, but there's none left.
Right.
To cook some more.
You get the L and the T.
Yeah.
Right, no B.
Yeah, and if you're on the keto diet like me or a paleo diet or any of those high-protein diets, bacon's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, bacon's great. Nina Teicholz, she's a best-selling New York Times author. She wrote a book called The Big Fat Surprise, Why Butter, Meat, and Cheese Belong in a Healthy Diet. And she kind of took on the thinking that saturated fats, the fat found in meat and butter and dairy, were bad for you. And she showed how that got demonized over the last few decades. But she debunks that whole thing and shows why that's just a myth. And she tells people all the time, people, bacon is better for your hips and your gut than bagels. Bacon over bagels. Just remember that. Bacon over bagels.
All right.
There's too many carbs in bagels. You need bacon.
You're sure.
You need protein.
And I tell you another thing that's great, and we picked up a case of this the other day, the salmon, man, and those, and just, you know, the individual. I like how you do it, too. I mean, just individual deals. Yep. Hey, like for us, just me and Victoria and stuff, and, you know, you don't have to do the whole big fillet, like it's nice sometimes, which you offer. But, man, those individuals,
they're nice.
The salmon are awesome.
Yeah, and those can go right on the grill from frozen without compromise of the quality at all.
Oh,
they're so thin.
Right.
And they cook, they don't really, you know, they cook so fast anyways. But, mm-hmm. yeah, Taryn and Kara, actually, the people that catch those for us, they're up in Alaska right now
getting ready
for the run. They got a brand new boat, big boat, it's beautiful. And we already had to place our order for what we have coming in this fall. We're almost out. We got some extra pallets in from them this spring because of COVID. Restaurants mm-hmm. had shut down, so they moved some pallets from the Seattle, Washington area that weren't going out to restaurants to us. We had more than normal. Normally we'd be out by this time of year. But we have just a few cases left, and then we'll be out for a few months until probably October.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they'll be fishing for the next season.
And I'm telling you, I mean, I've been to Alaska. I've caught it and been back home in 5 days with it and know how that tastes. And I'm telling you, yours tastes just like that.
Yeah.
Just like, I mean, caught it 3 or 4 days ago. I mean, it's awesome.
Well, one thing that Terrence says that he does that not a lot of companies do is he bleeds them on the boat. So when they catch them, and they catch them with nets,
right.
And these are wild caught, right? They're not line fishing for them, though.
Sure.
They're catching them, and their catch every day is monitored by the Department of Agriculture in Alaska. Very heavily. They have to report everything.
Very heavily.
Because they don't want to overfish the waters. But it's probably one of the most highly regulated fishing areas in the world, but with good reason, you know. So, but a lot of companies, Terrence is out there fishing with all these other boats. He knows they don't bleed them. And then just like any animal, you know, like you get an elk, and you have to hang it up and bleed it out.
Yeah.
You do.
Sure.
Or it's going to affect the meat quality. And
absolutely.
It's no difference with fish.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Once again, Greg Bloom is with us. It's barbersfoods.com. Go on the website. A lot of specials they've got right now. And I mean, from just so much to mention. But the bison, I will tell you, is excellent. And really, and I'm not just saying this because Greg's sitting here. But, folks, I'm telling you, everything they have there, you will taste the difference. You take the air-chilled chicken, Greg, that was one of the first things we tried, and, man, everybody I've given that to and that has tried that has said 100% taste the difference. It's just so clean tasting and so moist.
People don't realize that when you buy store-bought chicken that's not air-chilled, and there's air-chilled chicken other than Barber's Foods, but not everybody has air-chilled chicken, but most of the chicken consumed in this market has 10 times the chlorine as your swimming pool or your hot tub. So do you like drinking chlorine? I mean, no, but the chicken picks that up. It does affect the taste of it. Why do they have to chlorinate the water? Because they chilled that chicken after it was slaughtered in a big pool, a swimming pool full of brackish, brown, bloody, yucky, feathery water, and they have to add bleach to it to keep it from being really, you know, harmful. So it picks it up. So air-chilled chicken doesn't have that at all.
Sure.
Doesn't have that. So on my website, there's actually, you can go to barbersfoods.com and click on videos and see a video tour of the Pittman Farm family and how they air chill.
That's
how they air
really
chill.
Good. Well done.
Yeah. And it costs more to do it that way, but you can taste it. You know, you can, you yourself can attest that you taste better. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. We talked about the grilling side of it. I know you are great at the smoking of meats as well, and thank you for your tips that you've given us and actually came over and helped us with that. But a few tips on, again, common mistakes people can make maybe when they're smoking some meat.
Yeah, one mistake that I've made is not cleaning your smoker out enough, because if you don't clean it out, you know how you have to pull the grate off and then that flat steel pad and just vacuum it out and kind of scrub it, because it'll start picking up some off flavor, especially if you're doing salmon in there and chicken and all these different. So one thing is to clean your smoker every month. The other thing is that if you don't have a pellet smoker or one of those big eggs or one of those, you know, the whole thing about smoking is, you know, is control. You want to control the temperature.
Sure.
If you're doing a brisket in there, especially a brisket, but a lot of things that are a little trickier than just a steak or a chicken breast, right? You want to have a controlled environment. So those pellet smokers, I mean, do you use your pellet smoker often?
You know, we've done some. I'm like, Victoria, go, call Greg.
Yeah.
It needs a few times to get it down. But we've done it some with some, and I'm telling you, everything that you showed us worked perfect.
Yeah.
And, huge, again, taste difference from grilling something and smoking something.
Yeah. You know what I found? I have a Traeger, the big one, the biggest one you can buy.
Right.
And I have the small one. It's called the Tailgater. And it's the smallest one you can buy.
Yeah,
and
that's the one you had me get.
Yeah, the smallest one actually has better control and turns meat out better. Because the big one, unless you buy the double insulated one, when it's cold outside in the winter or the fall, or you know, it just can't hold temp. So you need to turn up to 350 or whatever temperature you're trying to get to. It can't get there. So you call Traeger, you know, and their answer is, "Well, buy an insulated blanket for $150."
Right. Yeah.
So I would say, just if you don't have a pellet smoker, think about getting one, but just buy a small one. You don't need the big jumbo one. You can cook a lot of meat on a small one.
Right.
A lot.
Yeah.
Enough for a family of, you know, eight people. Easy. Right.
And you've got a rack of ribs that's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a rack of ribs on there, and ribs are hard right now to find. We have them, but in the pork world, nationwide, there's kind of a rib shortage right now.
Right.
So because it's summertime, people are grilling ribs. But yeah, we have these baby back ribs, and the difference between a back rib and a St. Louis rib or a spare rib is just where it comes from, the animals. I tell people the easiest way to remember it is, you know, most of us carry around a spare tire on the front of us. So a spare rib comes from the spare tire,
right.
Is the rib just right underneath the bacon. So the bacon is taken off, and then there's a rib there. That's, you know, off the gut, right? So spare rib is there. And then a St. Louis rib is just a squared up St. Louis rib. It's just made pretty because a St. Louis rib has kind of a funky, weird shape to it.
Mm-hmm.
So long time ago, meat plants figured out, let's square it up, make it a nice rectangle, and kind of make it prettier, and that's called a St. Louis rib, but it's a spare rib. So whether you're doing spare ribs or back ribs, you know, of course, back ribs are coming off the back,
sure.
The back, so right off the loin. So if you did a bone-in pork chop, that's that same bone, right? So, but I love doing those. And, you know, people like to boil them. I don't really like to boil them. I think it affects the flavor. I think you had to do that if you have cheap pork. But, you know, some people love to boil them. But I just smoke mine for an hour, and then I finish them in the oven. And I find out they turn better in the oven than – have you tried the oven method?
Yes. Yeah. And it just perfection, really.
Yeah, you can control it. You can cook them for 6 hours, and then you know, they fall off the bone.
Right.
They're just like – they're boneless almost. Mm-hmm. Like. But if you like them a little – like a little chew in your ribs, then
right. –
do them for 4 hours,
yeah.
You know. So, yeah, I have a video on that on my website. People can go to videos and see me doing that.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. So. About 30 seconds here, but, you know, one thing, too, if you just boil it all down, man, so much healthier for us to eat food like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's paying a little more attention to their health probably over this last year and a half, what we've been through, and, you know, building up your immune system, all that kind of stuff. Well, you know what? It starts with your diet.
Yeah. Right? Starts with your diet, and it costs just a little bit more to raise an animal the right way instead of fast.
Yeah.
And they raise them fast most of the time because the big retailers buy on price.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a big retail buyer, you want the cheapest price. So,
sure.
Yeah, so there's a difference.
Yep, absolutely. Greg, always fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Barbersfoods.com, 303-466-7338. If you've got any questions, but go on that website now. Place your order, and we will get it to you. And, folks, I promise you will not regret it. Great, great food, great values at barbersfoods.com. We'll be right back.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the Asset Manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
This is Chris Kane with 303 Roofer. If you have an insurance claim on your roof and want to keep some of that money in your pocket, give us a call and we'll give you a cash bid to replace your roof. You pay insurance every month and now insurance has paid you. It's your money and we understand that. So give us a call at 303-390-1000. 1382 or visit our website, 303roofer.com.
At Flesh and Beck Law, your attorney sets you at ease from the first meeting so you have the space to think clearly. After an injury, you immediately start worrying about how you will afford the healing process. You start thinking about insurance deductibles, physical therapy appointments, vehicle repairs, and how to pay for rent in the meantime. Listening to one calm, qualified voice throughout the process will help you think rationally instead of making decisions based on anxiety. Call Flesh and Beck Law for a free, no-obligation consultation, and you will talk to a lawyer right away, not some legal assistant who just wants to find out how much money your case might be worth. Then, once you and your attorney both decide to move forward with your case, you will continue working with that attorney the whole time. The same person who meets you for a consultation will also sit beside you in court. Eliminate the fear of the unknown. Call Flesh and Beck Law at 303-806-8886.
You're listening to KLZ 560, your home station.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to be playing for you here these next few weeks some segments from a show that I have the privilege of doing in Dallas with a doctor, Dr. Lewis Coates. And he has a family medical practice there in the Dallas area. And he just brings some great information, and I wanted to share it with our Haystack audience here as well. So again, he is not a local doctor. He's out of the Garland, Texas area, but just great health information. So we're going to join that conversation now with Dr. Lewis Coates. Dr. Coates, always good to have you on, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show again.
You know, this is actually our one-year anniversary this today. 1 year ago, we started BetterHelp. And so thank you for that. It has been a lot of great information and a lot of fun doing the show with you. We're going to talk about blood work here a little bit today and something that you know, we've all been through, and then the doc goes through it, and, you know, a lot of times they just tell you, you know, hey, a lot of things are in range, or they may point out some things, but thought we'd kind of break it down where maybe we could have a little better understanding of what our doctor is even looking at when they want us to do some blood work. So, Dr. Coates, let's start out with just kind of, you know, we all know there's ranges on there. How do they go about even setting those parameters there and the ranges?
Well, each lab, it depends on the equipment to some degree, but most of the time it's pretty standardized. And what they'll do is they'll take an average. And what I try to tell patients is that you got to remember, just because one little thing's out of range doesn't mean that there's really a problem sometimes. But they take an average, they come up with that number, and then they do the standard deviation above and below. And most people will fall in, they try to pick a number that most people are going to fall into if things look good, okay? And so that's how they come up with the parameters. And you're going to see that on some labs, there's quite a range, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you may look on there and you go, wow, look, you know, look at this low number, it's really low, and the high number is really high. And then on others, the range may be a lot narrower. For instance, on men with PSA, you know, anything above 4.0 is considered abnormal. Okay, so the normal range is 0 to 4.0. So it's not a huge range there. And but other labs have a pretty significant range, and that's because most people fall within those numbers.
Gotcha. Okay. So when, you know, a lot of times, you know, we'll come through and, you know, doctors say you're in that range. And like I say, when you look at something that maybe has a range of, you know, 250 to 350 or something like that, or, you know, I was looking at one on a ferritin level. It goes from like 33 to 236 on one thing I was looking at. And if you're at the, you know, the very bottom of something, or if you're at the very top of something, but yet, you know, you say they're in range. So should there be any concern of the patient when you're really low or really on that high-end spectrum?
The majority of the time, no.
Okay.
And what we'll do is we'll look at some other parameters. It depends on what the lab is, but there are sometimes other labs that go along with that lab, and we make sure that those numbers are in range too. But most of the time, if it's in the range, you're usually in good shape.
Okay. Now, when you're looking, we thought we'd just kind of break down some different things that you may be looking at. So when, let's first of all say this. When you just talk about, hey, we're going to do some blood work on you, is that everything all-encompassing when you just do that, or are there different things that a client or a patient should maybe ask for with a doctor to really get a better look at things?
Well, there's different sets of blood work that we get. And, you know, it depends on what the patient's concerns and problems are as to what labs we order.
Okay.
Now, when someone comes in for an annual physical, we'll order a more broad spectrum of labs, okay? In that case, we're going to get blood counts for white blood cell counts, hemoglobin, hematocrit, platelets. We're going to get kidney functions, liver functions, thyroid functions. For men, we're going to get a PSA if they're over 40. So, you know, depends on what the situation is. Now, if someone comes in with belly pain, we're going to get amylase and lipase, which are pancreatic enzymes that we normally wouldn't get. So, you know, depending on the complaint that the patient has, we may order different sets of labs. If somebody has what appears like an autoimmune disorder, we'll get an ANA, a SED rate, a CRP, and those are numbers that measure inflammation. But we wouldn't just routinely get an ANA. You know, those days are long gone. Insurance companies won't pay for it either.
Right. So,
you know, 25 years ago when I first got into medicine, when someone came in, we pretty much circled everything, okay? But those days have pretty much gone by the wayside.
Okay. All right, so let's kind of break down some areas here. And, you know, you hear a lot about A1C, and we've certainly talked a lot about diabetes and type 2 diabetes. And so I pulled one of mine that we actually did, so I'm just going to kind of give you some terms and let you explain it. But when you're looking at the whole idea of diabetes or different things, I noticed glucose and then the A1C. What are you looking for there?
When you're looking at diabetes, the first thing we look at is the glucose, the fasting sugar, and it's supposed to be under 100, okay? So if somebody comes in and their glucose is 88, then that's completely normal. If somebody comes in and we have two fasting readings over 125, then there's a good chance that they're diabetic, okay? Now, people always ask, well, what does it mean when I'm between 100 and 125? You didn't tell me anything for that. And so... That is what we call glucose intolerant. A lot of times those people have metabolic syndrome and they're in a pre-diabetic stage. So that would be a situation where we'd want to be very cautious on what sugars you start consuming, start watching your diet, and get these things under control, because a lot of those people that are between 100 and 125 will eventually become diabetic. So. Another thing we can use, which is the other lab that you brought up, which is the hemoglobin A1C. And the hemoglobin A1C on most labs, normal is going to be like around 5.7 or less, okay? Now, what we look for is a hemoglobin A1C of less than 6.5. Anything above 6.5 is what we consider an uncontrolled diabetic. So let's say that somebody came in with that sugar that was 119. We got an A1C, and it's 6.1. Well, that patient is now what we consider a diet-controlled diabetic. He has evidence of diabetes because his hemoglobin A1C is above 5.7, but it's not uncontrolled, which is above 6.5.
Okay.
So he is now controlling it with diet. So we would tell that patient it's very important to watch the sugars in your diet. Let's keep this thing under 6.5 so we don't need medication down the road.
Gotcha. All right. One on here talks about uric acid. What are you looking at there?
All right. Uric acid is a number that we look at for gout, okay? If somebody has a high uric acid level, then they likely have a disease called gout. And gout is an accumulation of uric acid in the blood from foods called purines. They have a substance called purines in them. And those are usually foods like red meats, alcohol, cheeses, shrimps. At one time, gout was called the disease of kings. And the reason it was called the disease of kings is because back in the medieval days, they believed only royalty could catch gout. And it makes sense because the peasants were all eating, you know, grains, and the royalty people were eating the red meats, the wines, the cheeses. And so only the people they thought that were from royal families caught gout, which isn't necessarily true, but it was just because of the diets that were consumed by those people that they had a better chance of catching gout. Now, if we look at the uric acid level, we need that number as low as possible. And when that number is above 8.0, most of those people start to have gout symptoms. And that's a very pain. It's a joint that gets red, hot, swollen. Gout is extremely painful. I see patients come in my office and they say they need a wheelchair just to get in and out just mm-hmm. because of gout.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. I've had a few friends that have had that too, and they said that is extremely, extremely painful. So what do you do then to get that number down? Let's say, you know, you're at, you know.
Yeah, there's medications
okay.
that we use. You know, if somebody doesn't want to take medication, then we tell them to watch his diet, okay? You know, cut out alcohol, cut out cheeses, cut out meat, cut out shrimp. Shellfish are real high in uric acid, purines. So you can Google gout diets, and there's a whole list of things that you have to avoid. And, you know, certainly if you can do that, then you can control it. But, you know, I'll have a friend that we go out to eat, and he has gout, and I'll see him at the steakhouse eating, you know, a medium rare steak with a lobster, and, you know, he's drinking a glass of wine, and then he complains the next day he can't walk.
Well, right.
You know, I'm like, okay, I sat there and watched what you ate. I told you at the dinner, hey, you might want to choose a fish, you know, a grilled fish or a salad or, you know, but it does, you know, if you have gout, you know, if you do these things, that there's a good possibility that it can flare up.
Yes, sir. If you're just joining us, we're going through kind of your blood work and blood tests and what they mean and what your doctors are looking for when they're going through these and reviewing with you. All right. So when you're looking at kidneys and stuff, is that the bun and the creatine?
Yeah. The biggest factor for kidneys is something called GFR, glomerular filtration rate. It'll be abbreviated GFR on your labs. And we want that number as high as possible. You want it above 90, ideally. And if that number goes below 90, and if there's protein in your urine, then you could have stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, or stage 5 kidney disease. Stage 5 kidney disease when the GFR is 15 or less. Stage 4 is 15 to 30. Stage 3 is 30 to 60. And then stage 2, you have to have protein in the urine, is between 60 and 90. And then stage 1 is, we really don't worry too much. A lot of people would be in stage 1. It's just protein in the urine, okay?
Okay.
So if somebody comes in and their GFR is going down, the other number we look at is the creatinine, okay? And that's the number right above the GFR. So the higher that number, the worse off your kidneys are, okay? The GFR, the creatinine and the BUN help us also determine the amount of kidney damage. Those numbers can sometimes be affected from medications. People that don't drink enough water get dehydrated here in Texas, you know, in the summer when it's 100 degrees out like it is now. If somebody goes out and they don't drink enough water, they could see their BUN certainly go up significantly because they're getting dehydrated, and that can cause damage to the kidneys. Usually it's short-term, meaning that they go into the hospital, we give them IV fluids, and their kidney functions go back pretty close to normal. However, if you get dehydrated enough or things get bad enough, you can sometimes cause permanent damage to your kidneys. So you do want to make sure that you are drinking a lot of water, and make sure you stay hydrated. Out here in this Texas heat, this time of year, it can be detrimental to the kidneys.
Wow. Okay. And then when you're looking at things like, you know, sodium, potassium, calcium, those kind of things, what are you looking at there?
Yeah, sodium, potassium, and calcium. Sodium's real difficult because fluid status depends a lot on sodium can go low from drinking too much water, or sodium can go low from not drinking enough water, okay? So sodium, we have to actually look at the patient's fluid status to know, is their volume status normal? Is it high? Is it low? You know, what kind of fluid status are they having? But there's a lot of things that can cause sodium to go wrong. Once again, not drinking enough water, drinking too much water, heart disease, lung disease. A lot of these things can mess up sodium. Kidney disease. Potassium is another electrolyte that we look at. A lot of times it can be messed up with diuretics. Taking diuretics, a lot of times you lose potassium in the urine. It's got to be replaced. So we have to make sure that someone's on diuretics that the potassium level is balanced. So those are common problems that we have to look at. A lot of these things, calcium, potassium, sodium, are balanced by the kidney.
Mm-hmm.
So fluid status plays a big role on these kidney functions. Once again, if somebody has kidney disease, their kidneys may not be properly balancing out these electrolytes. So those are certainly things to look for. Kidney level, if calcium is real, real high, then it can be a parathyroid problem. It can be a situation where somebody has cancer, you know. So, okay. You know, cancer can make calcium go real high. There's some potential cancers that can mess up the calcium. So, you know, typically that's not the case, but it is something that we want to keep an eye on. If somebody's calcium comes back real high, then we have to keep an eye on what may be causing it. Now, calcium on the labs sometimes can be confusing because it may look high and it's not really high because we have what we call a corrected calcium. And a corrected calcium is where if you go to Google and type in corrected calcium calculation, it'll give you the calcium number, the albumin number, and then it will go, based on those numbers, calculate out what the corrected calcium actually is. Because calcium is dependent on albumin because it binds to it. So if somebody has a very high albumin, then calcium may look high, but it's really not high.
So the protein and that albumin and globulin is on here. Is that all in that protein?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all based on nutritional status, too.
Okay.
So if somebody's malnourished, so let's say we have an 88-year-old living in a nursing home and he refuses to eat, then we're going to have low albumin, and that's a sign of malnutrition.
Okay. All right. Now, what are you getting into when you're talking about the liver? What are you kind of looking at different things on a blood work with liver possible issues?
Yeah, there's the big ones on liver are AST and ALT and total bilirubin. Those are probably your big three. And outfoss can be related to liver, but it can also be related to bone. But anyway, the three that we're talking about, typically they go up with liver diseases, okay? A lot of times that'd be our first sign that somebody's an alcoholic. You know, somebody comes into the office for an annual physical and the liver enzymes are really high. A lot of times we'll call them, hey, you know, you need to start watching what you know, your alcohol consumption, Advil. And then they sometimes come back and say, well, I do drink a lot. And a lot of times they'll say, well, I drink some. Okay? And I'll ask them, what is some? And they'll say, you know, a 12-pack a night or, you know what I'm saying?
Right, so, right.
You know, everybody, when you ask about alcohol, you always have to ask what their definitions are.
Sure.
Because if they say they drink a little, you know, to me that may be one drink every week or twice or once or twice a week, and they may be thinking that a little is a six-pack a night. You know?
Right.
And so you have to find out what is their definition of these things. But usually that's when you find out that, you know, a lot of times when somebody has really high liver enzymes, it's because they're drinking a significant amount of alcohol. And that liver is having to metabolize out that alcohol every single night. So they go to bed, and that liver is working out all the alcohol, getting it out of their system, and then the next day they drink again and again and again. So it can play a significant role.
Sure. What about gallbladder? You know, I hear a lot of people getting their gallbladder even removed and all, so we'll kind of approach this in a couple of ways. What are signs that you may have a gallbladder issue?
Yeah, gallbladder, the liver enzymes can be up, but also the amylase and lipase, which are pancreatic enzymes. A lot of times somebody may have a stone that's blocking the duct, and the gallbladder gets damaged from that, and that's because those enzymes can't get into the gut, and they back up and damage the liver and damage the gallbladder. So if somebody comes in and we're worried about gallbladder, we'll get liver enzymes, and we'll also get an amylase and a lipase level, as those can be high in those type of situations.
Okay. Now, dealing with iron, and I mentioned the ferritin level, and something on here says serum iron and TIBC. What are you looking at with iron and ferritin levels and things?
All right. Well, first thing we would do is we would get a complete blood count, which is a CBC is what we call it. And we look on there and look at the hemoglobin, hematocrit, and then there's also some numbers on there which measure the amount of iron in the blood, okay? So it tells, you know, if somebody has an MCH that's low, there's not enough iron in their blood, okay? So if the hemoglobin and hematocrit are abnormal, that's a sign of anemia. And then to look at the different causes of anemia, we would get ferritin, TIBC, those type of numbers, transferrin sometimes. Anyway, those would determine, help us determine what kind of anemia is this. Okay, is it an anemia from blood loss? Is it anemia from chronic disease? Is it anemia from kidney disease? Because there's other things that can cause people to be anemic. And some people are born anemic. So, you know, they may have a blood disease from the time they were born. Hmm. So we have to look, you know, there's certain things called thalassemias where people can't keep enough iron in their blood. So in order to look at those things, what we would do if somebody's CBC comes back and their hemoglobin and hematocrit are abnormal, we would say, hey, you're anemic. A lot of times we'll get extra blood, and those extra blood tests will be the ferritin and the TIBC, which stands for total iron binding capacity. And that will help us determine what type of anemia is this, okay? Because if it's an anemia of blood loss, we need to go in and find out where this blood is leaking. That means you're losing blood somewhere.
Right.
And in women, it's almost always their periods, okay? So if somebody, if a young 35-year-old lady comes in and she has anemia of blood loss, we're not near as concerned as if she's 65, okay? If she's 65, then we're going to say, hey, you shouldn't be losing any blood anymore. Where is this blood going? We need to look for colon cancer.
Okay.
Or an ulcer. But the main thing we want to rule out at that point is make sure they've had a colonoscopy, make sure that we have done the proper test to make sure that there is no colon cancer, because a 65-year-old shouldn't be leaking blood, okay?
Sure.
Now, if a 65-year-old has a different type of anemia, maybe she has, like we talked about, a GFR earlier that's, you know, 20, she has CKD, chronic kidney disease, stage 4, well, then she may have anemia from kidney disease. And so that's where those other numbers come in. It would tell us that that's the most likely type of anemia, so we're not near as concerned as if it was an anemia from blood loss.
All right. So if someone has like a 450, 500, and a ferritin, is that pretty high?
When it starts, the ferritin goes up, you can have a disease called hemochromatosis, and that's where your body produces too much ferritin, okay? And the problem with too much ferritin is it can deposit iron into other organs like your liver, and sometimes they get deposits in their eyes, and it can cause damage to these other organs. So if somebody has hemochromatosis, the treatment is we simply go give them blood draws. So they'll have a hematologist who will go in and pull out a bunch of blood, you know, every few months to make sure he keeps the levels down.
Oh, okay. All right. If you're just joining us, Dr. Lewis Coates is our guest. You're listening to Better Health, and we are kind of going through blood work and giving you maybe better understanding of what the different things that docs are looking for and maybe what you can talk to your doctor about even receiving with blood work. All right. Let's get in now to like your cholesterol, triglycerides, all that. And we've talked about it before, but just maybe explain it to folks a little bit.
Yeah, cholesterol is a real big one, okay? And when someone comes in for an annual physical, that's usually when we get their cholesterol. Or if they have known cholesterol problems or heart disease or diabetes, we get cholesterol all the time on those patients. But cholesterol, there's different numbers. There's total cholesterol. And for most patients, I tell them now that total cholesterol is a pretty worthless number. And, you know, people come in, oh, my God, my total cholesterol is too high. Well, if it's all HDL, and H stands for healthy. Those are those cells that are healthy. They're helping you. They're cleaning your blood vessels. So HDL, if you look at it on your lab, it's going to have a normal, usually above 40, is normal. We want that number as high as possible, okay? Ideally, you'd like that number to be 80 or 90. If the higher that number goes, the less chance you have of having a heart attack or stroke. It is basically what it means.
Okay.
So when somebody has a high HDL, they're a lot less likely to have heart disease. So we want that number as high as possible. Now, the other number, the bad number, is the LDL. It stands for bad cholesterol. I tell patients to think of it as lethal, okay? These are the ones that are clogging up your vessels and ultimately can kill you. So you want the LDL to be as low as possible. And what's really important is the ratio. What is that ratio of HDL to LDL? The lower that ratio, the healthier you are. So if you have a 1-to-1 ratio, that means you have every time that LDL is put trying to lay something down, the HBL guy's going in and cleaning it up. So it's very unlikely that you'll have any trouble with heart disease or strokes if you have those kind of numbers. Now, when the number, that ratio starts to go up, particularly when it gets above 3 to 1, all of a sudden, now you got a problem. Okay, you got, you know, basically 3 bad guys to every 1 good guy, and they're laying down plaque faster than the HDL can go in and help clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, triglycerides is another component, and it's based off of cholesterol and sugars. So if somebody is diabetic, they'll usually have very high triglycerides. So when people's triglycerides are high, we tell them to watch the carbs in their diet because it can be a sign of prediabetes. So we want to make sure that we keep these numbers down. And triglycerides definitely play a role in heart attack and strokes, which is one of the reasons that diabetics have a lot higher ratio of heart attacks and strokes. So we want to do what we can to keep all these numbers under control. The HDL, you can't do much about. The HDL, most of it is genetic. So when you're born, your parents gave you a gene, and that usually tells you how much HDL you have. You can increase it a little bit with exercise, and there's a supplement called niacin that people take that helps raise HDL.
Okay.
But for the most part, that number is what it is, but which is bad. You know, it'd be nice if we had something that could raise HDL all the way up to 80 or 90, and all of us would probably be protected from heart disease. Now, the good news is we can change the LDL. So we have lots of medications out there that can lower LDL. And so if we lower that ratio that way, even though we can't affect the HDL, we can affect the LDL. So the HDL stands where it stands, but if you bring the LDL down, that makes a huge change in the ratio and in your risk for heart attacks and strokes.
All right. All right. Man, just a couple minutes left here, but we're not going to be able to get into all the thyroid deals. Maybe we can do that next week. But I want to touch on the homocysteine real quick and vitamin D. So let's take the homocysteine first.
Yeah, homocysteine is a slightly controversial number, but I think it's pretty well established. But people that have a high homocysteine level have more risk of heart disease. And you can treat that by giving patients folic acid. Okay? So if somebody comes in and they have a very high homocysteine level, we'll tell them to take supplemental folic acid, and that helps bring that homocysteine level down, and that reduces the potential risk of heart attack and stroke. You know, homocysteine, the higher that number goes, the more likely it is for you to have heart disease. So it's associated, when it's elevated, with heart attacks and strokes. We don't know it's directly a cause, but we know that it is associated. And so therefore, what we do is we tell patients that have a high homocysteine level, hey, let's work on getting this down. Let's start taking folic acid. And usually when they take folic acid, simple folic acid supplements, it will start coming down.
Right. All right. And I got about 30 seconds here for vitamin D.
Vitamin D is basically, it's just a supplement. It helps protect your bones. It strengthens your immune system. We know that vitamin D plays a bigger role than we once thought it did due to COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But getting that vitamin D level as high as possible, particularly just try to get above 50, is really important. It strengthens your immune system. It strengthens your bones. It makes you overall healthier. So that's a good number to look at.
All right. Well, Dr. Coates, hey, as always, we appreciate it, and we want to thank you for your time and doing this show with us. It is helping a lot of folks, and we will look forward to our visit next week, sir.
All right. Thanks for having me. I'll see you next week.
That was Dr. Lewis Coates, and once again, if you're just joining us, Dr. Coates' practice is in Garland, Texas. We do a show each week there in the Dallas area called Better Health, and he just shares some great information, so I wanted to share it with you, our Haystack audience. I want to thank all of our guests today, but mostly thank you for being with us here for Haystack Health Radio. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Leave it right here on KLZ 560.
If views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.